So I might just give you a little update. Finally getting settled in North Carolina. We've been here 7.5 months. I've been here 7.5 months, and finally, kind of like the light has come on, and I'm happy to be here. It's taken me a long time. Activity is starting to pick up as if we're opening our new office. It should open right around the first of the year in a little place called Wahlberg. Maybe you know where that is, maybe not. But my daughter and I are going in together. It should be a lot of fun. Kind of what it was, the draw that brought us out here, and really looking forward to that opportunity. And I like coming to Hickory. You all are a good congregation. Enjoy it. We were back in Missouri at the end of October for the 50th anniversary celebration of the beginning of the Church of God in Columbia, Missouri. I don't know if you, it was on Inaccord maybe 2 weeks ago. Mr. Horchak talked about it. Mr. Horchak was there. And so he talked about it on Inaccord. There was a picture there. Did anybody see that? You know what? I was in that picture. How about that? My wife was front and center in that picture, so that was cool. But it was a really, really wonderful event. I don't know if you've been to a 50th anniversary celebration of any of the churches around here. I know there have been some. But I absolutely loved it. It was just such a treat to be there. It was held at a very beautiful Masonic Lodge building. And it wasn't there 50 years ago by any means. It's only been there, I think, 3 or 4 years. But it's very interesting. If you go 1 mile, one direction from that lodge, that's the place where we lived when I was baptized. And if you go the mile the other direction from that Masonic Lodge, there's the house there where I was baptized. There was a deacon that lived there, and that's where I was baptized. That's where we kept the tank. And so this little area really kind of has special meaning to me. I was baptized in 1976, so I was there for about 37 and one half years of Columbia's 50 years. Actually, there were only two people present who were there at that first service in 1964, October of 1964. One of them was wearing diapers when he was there, and the other one was actually on the Inaccord. If you go back and look at that, you'll see him. And then there was another gentleman who was there the second week, and they were both honored with plaques. But my wife and I think it was the Sabbath, we got up early and we drove by the old duplex where we lived when we were very young. And where we were when I was called, it was there that we lived when all those miracles went on in my mind. And all of the miracles and blessings that started taking place when I started tithing. It was really interesting, the things that happened back in that little place. We get attached to places, and places don't mean too much. But they have fondness in our minds, and a lot of things went on in that little place. And we tried to pick out that former deacon's house, because back then his was the only white house with black trim that was on that street. And now everybody's painted their house. I couldn't tell for sure which house it was, so it really doesn't matter too much. But I remember the day I was young. I was 21 years old. It was the Sabbath day. It was an afternoon, September 18th, 1976. And after services, morning services, we went over to the deacon's house. I was baptized, had hands laid on me. And then I remember we had a little coffee cake. And then I remember I drove home. It wasn't too far. And I think back on that day, it was a long time ago, and I certainly did not know what I was in for. For the last 38 years, no idea what I was in for. But I'm still here. And my theory is that God gave me probably the smallest portion of His Holy Spirit that He could divide up and gave it to me, because at that time I was as carnal as the day was long, you know, but I was called out of the world. But evidently, my theory also is that it took, because I'm here and I can look back now and I can see some progress. But that day, I got home from being baptized, and my wife, who was not in the church, she didn't come to the church with me, it took her 5 years of putting up with me before she finally saw the light, but she'd received a phone call while I was gone. from a Bible bookstore. And the Bible was in that I had ordered. So I had ordered an Oxford Wide Margin Bible. It's this Bible right here. $50, 1976. I was a student. I don't remember where I got the $50. I don't know what this Bible would cost now. It must be like a couple hundred bucks. I don't know. But I had come up with the $50. And even though it was a Sabbath day, I was in love with the Word of God. And so I got in my car and I drove down to a place called Parkade Plaza where this Bible bookstore was. And I picked it up and I paid for it. There was a little guilt in the back of my mind, like, should I be doing this on the Sabbath day? But I couldn't help it. You know, I went in and I got this Bible and I paid for it and I brought it home that day. This Bible's been rebound twice. And every time they rebind it, they take this machine and they cut the pages to make them even so they're not ragged. And the last time they did it, they cut off a bunch of my notes. I kind of got mad at them. But now, I don't use this Bible as much as I used to. The computer has come along, and now we do all of our studying on the computer. It's so much easier. But we still come up here, we bring the Bible really to preach out of it. I don't use it for too much else these days because of the computer. I don't know what people would have thought back then if they had known that I drove in. I don't know what people thought back then. If I drove in to that store on the Sabbath and picked up my Bible, I'd probably do the same thing again. I mean, it was a big deal. I was very excited, and God didn't smite me on the way or on the way home or take away His Spirit from me just that I just got like 1 hour before. But, you know, nobody knew. I didn't tell anybody till today. I know many, many people have been baptized by ministers of God, and they've turned away, they've turned back. They're no longer here. You know a lot of those people. So, brethren, I think you are the exception. I have no idea what the percentage is of those who have stayed with it through the years. I have no idea. But I don't think it's 50%. You know, I've really stuck with it. The brethren that gathered there in Missouri a few Sabbaths ago are the exception, I think, as well. Now, most of them have been around for a long time. And when they went under the water and they had hands laid on them, I think it took. God knows who is who and which is which. Not me. I don't know. So I have really no need to pass judgment on anybody of those people. I don't think we should. It's not our job. Just making some observations. But I want to ask you today, you know, do you appreciate what God has done for you? Do you appreciate how special it is that He actually opened your mind to your calling? Let's turn over to the book of John. So Mr. Kelly called. He said he thought I'd give an oldie but goodie sermon today, but I had this one going, so you're getting a new and untested sermon. Maybe someday it'll be an oldie but goodie, you think? Maybe an oldie but baddie. There are a couple of stories and examples in the book of John, of course more than a couple, that are really interesting. It kind of depends on how you break the book of John down, but there are basically 8 signs or miracles that are recorded in the book of John. I was looking through the Companion Bible. I don't know if you have the Companion Bible. It's written by a man named Bullinger. You've probably heard those names. And probably a pretty good reference to have if you were able to pick that up. And he says that those miracles that those miracles should be grouped in pairs. So the first goes with the 8th. So the first is turning water into wine. The 8th is when they cast a net and caught, 156 fish? He says you group those two together, and then the 2nd and the 7th, 3rd and the 6th, 4th and 5th. And I didn't know what I thought of that, but now that I'm gone through these, because 2 of these stories really caught my eye recently, and that's what I'm going to talk about, and they are these 2, and if we talk about them, you're going to see that they really do go together. So maybe there is something to what Mr. Bullinger says, but so maybe it's not really a coincidence that I was drawn to the 3rd and the 6th miracles in that book. Both of them occur on the Sabbath day. Both of them involve astounding healings. Both have lessons and meanings for us that go beyond physical healing and well-being. Both talk about sin, but what drew me to them in the last couple of weeks is that both involve this one-in-a-million gift to an unsuspecting individual. Both of them do. A special choosing that Christ would come to these people and actually do something special for them. It was, probably for them, it was their calling as well, if you really think about it. All right, so John 5, verse 1. John 5, verse 1. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. So the commentaries say it was probably the Passover. I'm good with that. I'm not sure. It doesn't really matter. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folks, or sick people, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. So this was really kind of a strange occurrence, don't you think, that John tells us about. And it happened evidently more than once. Evidently it happened regularly. Verse 4, for an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped in was made whole of whatever disease he had. So this is kind of an interesting thing. Why did God do this? It's from God. He allowed an angel to do this. It sounds to me like maybe at a certain season, maybe it's during this season of Passover, unleavened bread, maybe once a day, we only conjecture. This water moved and whoever got in first was healed. So why would God do that? I don't know. But it's kind of neat. That's what went on. Verse 5, and a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. So that's 38 years ago. That's how long I was baptized. I was just a kid. I was 21. And so I'm going to say that this man who was laying by that pool, who had been sick for 38 years, was just a kid when he got sick as well. Okay? He was wet behind the ears when he got whatever it was, polio or whatever happened to him where he couldn't move very well at all. And he was laying there waiting for this miracle to happen. I don't know how he thought he was going to get in there. He just wanted to be around what was happening, I guess. Verse 6. When Jesus saw him lie and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he said unto him, will you be made whole? So verse 3 says there's a great multitude of sick people there. Jesus comes to this man, just this man, out of all those sick people, and he says, will you be made whole? New King James says, do you want to be made well? Well, the impotent man answered him, sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool, but while I am coming, another steps down before me. And Jesus said unto him, rise, take up your bed, and walk. So I imagine there's 200 or 300 people laying there. I mean, Jerusalem wasn't a city of millions then. I'm not sure. You know, probably a few tens of thousands in Jerusalem. So there's probably 200 or 300 people laying around this pool on these five porches. They're all sick people. They're all attracted to this pool by this event that has happened and the knowledge that people who are able to get in the pool are healed. Jesus comes to one, just one of them, and he says, will you be made whole? So 38 years ago, God the Father somehow drew me, this 21-year-old kid, to Jesus Christ, and he said to me, will you be made whole? I didn't hear those words, you know, but that's what happened. But the deal is, I didn't know I was sick. When God called you, I don't know if you knew that you were not well, or if you knew that you were not whole. I don't know. But I didn't know, and I suspect you didn't know either when God started working with you. So this is a story of physical healing, but it points to something much more important. It points to spiritual healing. Verse 9, and immediately the man was made whole and took up his bed and walked, and on the same day was the Sabbath. Well, of course it was the Sabbath. You know, lots of good things happen on the Sabbath. Lots of spiritual healing happens on the Sabbath. Verse 10, the Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, it's the Sabbath day. It's not lawful for you to carry your bed. So immediately there is this kind of absurd, shallow comment about the Sabbath. You think about it, maybe it's not totally absurd. I don't know how big his bed was, you know. He was carrying it, but it's probably just a mat, and it was a shallow comment. He answered them, and he said, he that made me whole, the same said unto me, take up your bed and walk. So surely after they had said that to him, and he says this, surely they at least paused to think, all right, this man was healed. Someone told him to pick up his bed and walk on the Sabbath. So maybe they, at least some of them thought about it. Verse 12, then asked they him, what man is that which said unto you, take up your bed and walk? And he that was healed didn't know who it was. For Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. So interesting, this man didn't know it was Jesus. I don't know if he'd heard of him. He just knew that it happened. So somebody told him to pick up his bed and walk, and he did it after 38 years of not being able to do it. Verse 14, afterwards, Jesus finds him in the temple and said unto him, behold, you are made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto you. So this is at a different place. So at least this guy walked, didn't go home. He went to the temple. That's a good thing. That's where he should have gone. At least he was thankful to God, thought he'd better head over to the temple because something special had happened to him. Jesus says, sin no more, lest a worse thing happen to you. So what could be worse than being a cripple for 38 years? You know, you can't think of too much worse physically. But Jesus was not talking about physical ailments when he told him that. You know, these examples that are in the Bible are not just to show us that Jesus could do miracles and heal people. You know, they were done, some of them were done so that they could be written down. We can read them and think about them and learn from them, and then we can shape our lives and our thoughts accordingly. So Jesus went and found this man in a different place. Maybe he knew where to look for him, who knows. And he said, you have been made well. Don't sin anymore. Worse things could happen. You know, we've heard that phrase, don't sin no more. In other places, a woman caught in adultery, right? He told her, go and sin no more. So I think everyone, commentaries, if you read about it, everyone thinks that this man's ailment was caused by sin. The disciples probably thought that when they heard Jesus say that. And that's what they thought in the next story we're going to read in chapter 9. You probably remember there's a man who was born blind. They thought the same thing. The disciples asked, who sinned, this man or his parents? But I don't think it has to be true that his ailment was caused by sin. Could have been. The point is that sinning can lead to the lake of fire. You know, we have to overcome sin because sin can lead to eternal death. Sin does lead to eternal death. Jesus can make us whole. Jesus made you whole spiritually. You know, he can make us whole. He can put us on the right track. Then we have to get our lives together. That's the way it works. So we'll come back to this story here. I just want you to think. You know, this guy, Jesus picked this guy out of a crowd. 200 or 300 people living there. It was quite a blessing. And then I think about Pentecost, 31 AD, a couple of years later, whenever that was this guy who had been made whole, was he in the group of 120? Or was he in the group of 3,000 who were baptized that same day? You know, I would hope he was there. I imagine he probably was in one of those two groups. We don't know his name. We won't know the answer to that question for a while, but someday we'll know. He knew he was physically sick. Do you think that he knew he was lacking spiritually? That he was a sinner? You know, when God came to you and figuratively said, "Will you be made whole?" Did you know that you were a sinner when God tapped you on the shoulder? I didn't know. I didn't know anything. I did find out later on, you know, the blinders were open and I got to see what was going on in my life. I was baptized when I was 21. Started listening to a radio broadcast when I was about 16. That coincided with me getting a car and being able to listen to a radio when I drove around. So I started hearing the broadcast when I was about 16. But that's been a huge part of my life, figuring out that I was not everything that I was cracked up to be. I think that's part of conversion. It doesn't all happen in the beginning. It happens through time as things come to light. Let's go over to chapter 9. Verse 1, and as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, "Master, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" So I don't think sin is talked about. I didn't really go and check, but I don't think sin is talked about in any of these other six signs or miracles in the book of John. But these two that are grouped together both talk about sin. So maybe they really do go hand in hand. Jesus answered, "Neither has this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night comes when no man can work. As long as I'm in the world, I am the light of the world." So what is the work that Jesus is doing? You know, they were hearing him talk. Maybe they thought he was just healing a lot of people, and that's what he meant when he said that. But the idea is that there is more to it than that. So once again, you know, my mind goes back to this place, a physical place, this northern section of the city of Columbia, Missouri, where all these things happened to me way back when. It's where I lived at that time in my life. I was really reminded of it a few weeks ago. This man certainly knew he was blind. He was sitting there begging. He didn't have any other way to make a living. I was there in this Columbia, Missouri. I did not know I was blind. And I'm guessing that you did not know you were blind. Maybe you didn't even know that you were blind from birth, but you were spiritually. Most of you were. Most of you know that you were, I would think. Maybe some of you think differently. I can't put words in your mouth or in your mind, give you something to think about. Verse 6, when he had thus spoken, he spit on the ground, made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. So once again, a strange thing happened. We had the strange moving of the waters. Now we have Jesus do this strange thing. He spit on the ground and he made this clay. And I'm thinking, if I was there, it would take me like 5 minutes to work up enough spit to do this. I would need a glass of water, you know, but Jesus, he was healthy. So he had all this saliva, just boom, lots of saliva in the ground, makes this clay. And surely the disciples are wondering, what in the world is he doing? And in verse 7, he said unto him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. He went his way therefore, and he washed, and he came seeing. So there's another pool, another indication that these two go hand in hand. And he said, "Go wash." And I'm thinking, all right, you need to go wash. You're going to wash that stuff off of your eyes, right? There is an allusion to baptism here as well, don't you think? Come up out of the water, a new man, and you begin to see things that you never saw before. And you can read down and you can see that it was, once again, the Sabbath day. So the Sabbath becomes an issue. The world resists and they say, see, you don't have to keep the Sabbath. Especially in chapter 5, you know, they talk about that. You can read the commentaries, they all mention that. Christ didn't have to keep the Sabbath. He was the Son. He didn't have to do it. He just did it because that's what they did. But brethren, I believe when we read these two events, surely we come to the opposite conclusion. I would think that we would. The Sabbath is this wonderful time God has provided for us when we are fed, when we fellowship, when we are taught. It's a time when you and I are made whole. It's a time when the scales, the blinders are removed from our eyes. Week after week, month after month, year after year, relentlessly, those things are removed from our eyes, one by one. And we began to see better and better and better. It grounds us every week to be here. And we remember, because the Bible says, remember the Sabbath day, because we can get very, very busy through the week. And our mind can get on those physical things. Mine can. It certainly does. But then we can remember every week, every 7 days, who our Maker is and why we were given life. You can just take a peek down at verse 39. Jesus said, for judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and they which see might be made blind. This is not just about physical healing. This is talking about spiritual principles. And what I'm saying to you today is that you should remember every Sabbath day for sure. Actually, you should remember more often than that. You should remember every day that you probably did not know you were blind, but yet you were given sight. You didn't know you were sick, but you were made whole. You're in the process of being made spiritually whole. I think now you know that you were sick, don't you? You know that you were blind. I was blind. I didn't know anything. For some reason, God drew me. It's very cool. You know, these two men in John 5 and 9, chapter 5 and chapter 9, they aren't just neat cases of healing. They are us. You know, are we thankful that God decided to walk by us, you know? Jesus picked this man out of a couple of hundred people, and he walked by him, and he stopped, and he said, will you be made whole? You were there minding your own business. I guess I was minding my own business. I was doing whatever I was doing when I was 18, 19, 20 years old. God walked by, and he stopped, and he tapped me on the shoulder. We should be very thankful that those things have happened. I don't want to turn there because I don't want to turn this into a Philadelphia Laodicea sermon, but I'm reminded of the Laodiceans, okay? You know the words that are said to them. You know, those people have some issues. Maybe I'm one of them. Maybe you are. I don't know. We all need to look at those words and see. Do those words really apply to us? But they say, I am rich and increased with goods. I have need of nothing. That's not talking about money. It could have a reference to, say, the Church of God in a country like the United States where everybody here has a little bit of money. And therefore, maybe it's easy to be lukewarm when you have money. But that's not talking about that. It's talking about believing that you are spiritually filled up, that you have need of nothing, that you are on top of things, that you're on the ball. It's talking about a spiritual arrogance. And Jesus says, you don't know, but you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. So I'm reminded of those words. I think I'll mention them one more time. This impotent man, this cripple by the pool at Bethesda, did he get lucky? Was it just chance? Did he deserve to be healed because he was really a good guy? Otherwise, was he better than the 100 or 200 or 300 other people who were laying all around him? And the blind man who sat there, he was begging. He was blind from birth. He sat there day after day, probably year after year. Was he better than the others who were sitting nearby? Surely there were others nearby begging. Maybe they weren't blind from birth. Because the others were not healed. Nobody else by that pool in Bethesda, except the ones who jumped in the water real quick. Nobody else was healed. Nobody else. Jesus didn't stop by and tap them on the shoulder. He didn't speak to them. They weren't healed. Was Jesus wrong? He could have healed everybody there. He could have. He didn't. He stopped and he picked one. And then he stopped by this man in John 9. I picture him sitting by a wall, you know, with a sign out that says blind from birth and a cup. And Jesus stopped there and talked to him. Was this man just in the right place at the right time? And then that makes me think about you and me. You know, what about you? Did you get lucky and hit the right radio station at the right time years ago? Was it just luck? Did God look down at you and say, look, I have to call him or her. They deserve it. They're talented. I need them. Is that what he said? Well, I'm thinking that none of this is true. None of that's true. I hope you believe the same thing. Actually, I think it might be true for Paul. I was going to mention it in the Bible study, but God needed someone who could write so much of the New Testament in a confusing way to hide the truth that he looked at Paul and said, I think I need him. And so he called him. But the rest of us, you know, I don't know. But for some reason, God decided to call us and choose us and allow us to read this book and understand a few things and to become a part of his church. And all the blessings that go with it, you know, you don't have to turn there. 1 Peter 2, verse 9 is one of my favorite passages in the Bible. So God picks us out. We're not deserving. We are nothing. And he says, you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people. Why would he say that about us? I mean, we were nothing. I was 21. I didn't know my right hand from my left. I had two kids, didn't know what in the world I was going to do. And God says, I'm part of a chosen generation, part of a royal priesthood, a holy nation. That just hardly makes sense to me that it could be true. Called out of darkness. Yeah, we were sick. We were blind into his marvelous light. That's what God has done for us. Just like those two gentlemen in John 5, John 9. Spiritually ill, spiritually blind. That was us. So to be chosen by God is quite a blessing. It's a big, big deal. Of all the people in history who had this opportunity, it's been given to you. It's a blessing. If you know people outside the church that know what you do, maybe it's your kids, maybe it's your family. They underestimate what's been given to you. They don't have any idea. They think you're just a little quirky, right? It's a bigger deal. What's been done to you, it's a bigger deal than was done for that man who was sick for 38 years. And then remember, he said to him, sin no more, lest something worse happens, like the lake of fire. You know, turn it around. Get your life in order. Something fantastic. I mean, you could turn that around. Sin no more, because something fantastic is awaiting you. And being able to walk is only the beginning. Being able to see and to read, where he could never see or read before. And he was healed in a lot of ways. I mean, if someone is born blind from birth, and then their eyes are open, you think he was surprised at what he saw? I mean, I don't know what he had imagined things were really like, but, you know, his mind had to be healed too. But that's just the beginning. You know, then he was probably there on Pentecost as well. Surely he was there. But brethren, why? Why did God call us? And of course we don't know. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians 1. So I'll make another confession. I've confessed this before in in Missouri, but I used to think, well, God called me because I was really patient. I had these two little kids and a wife, and we were too young to have two kids, and it wasn't always easy going. I thought, well, I was really patient, and that's why God called me. Well, that's just a bunch of hooey. I know now, that's just a bunch of hooey. Whatever hooey is, maybe that's, is that a bad word? You can delete that from the tape. It's a bunch of baloney. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26. For you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. Not many wise men. Nobody starts out with godly wisdom. Zero people start out with godly wisdom. That comes through the Spirit of God and time. Nobody. Not many geniuses are called into the church. You know, a few of them are. I know one or two. They surely are geniuses, you know. But even they were just as spiritually sick as the rest of us. Just as spiritually blind as the rest of us. They just have a brain that works a little bit better. Not many mighty people. Not many noble. Not many famous people. Next verse. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world. It's interesting, I checked these next two verses, and the King James, the Old King James, and the New King James, they're just about the same. You know, they could have made some improvements in the New King James. They kept the words just the same. So this word that's translated foolish things, the Greek is the word moros. You should write it in your notes. M-O-R-O-S. So you look it up in Strong's. Strong says it means dull or stupid. Heedless. Blockhead. That's what Strong says. And also absurd. So God has chosen the stupid, dull people of the world. Moros. M-O-R-O-S. It's where we get our English word, you figure it out, moron. Okay? So God has chosen morons. I don't know what you think of that. That's what Paul says. So I used to think God called me because I was patient. I don't know. But I think God called me because in whatever way or in whatever multitude of ways, I was a moron. I was a blockhead. I was dull or stupid. And when I look back on my life, you know in a lot of ways I fit the bill. You know, I think I'm lucky to have survived to the ripe old age of 40, 50, 60. God chose the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. If you look up Strong's for weak things, it means feeble, impotent. Just like that man who sat by the pool, the old King James calls him impotent. So those are the kind of people, whether physically or spiritually, that God called weak people. It could be talking about physical strength, could be talking about mental abilities, but it is certainly talking about our spiritual abilities as well. God called those who didn't have anything special. God didn't call us because we were spiritually strong. That's just not the way it was. We may not have been aware of that at first, but I think that if you look back, you know that that's true of you as well. Verse 28, and the base things of the world. Absolutely, this word means absolutely not noble, not esteemed, not famous, not accomplished. Those are the people that God chose. God has chosen the things which are despised. You know, it says things, that's the word that's used there, things, T-H-I-N-G-S. And we could say that God has used some despised things. You know, I think of the cross or a stake, what people were crucified on. You know, that was a despised thing. Yet God has used that and in a very big way. But in reality, you know, when he talks about things that are here. He's talking about people. He's talking about you. And it says, God has chosen the things which are not to bring to naught things that are. So we are not. That means you're close to a zero. That's what we were. That's what we had to offer God. Really zero. But he chooses us. Why? And then he tells us to confound the wise, the mighty, the folks who are highly esteemed, the ones who the world pays attention to. It's not that God doesn't like them. I think he does like them. They just aren't lined up right. And so we are there. If you read what it says, we're kind of there for them. They don't hardly have a chance without you because, you know, the wise of this world don't have godly wisdom at all. No real wisdom when it comes down to it. They may be able to do things in the business world or the academic world, but when it comes down to real godly wisdom about how to live, they don't have it. And the might and the power that's in this world, which there's a lot, it's not used properly. And the things which are esteemed. You can turn on your TV and see the things that are esteemed. They're esteemed for the wrong reasons. So, brethren, you've been called to set an example. Because if you can do it, if you can grow and mature and develop real character, if you can succeed in God's way and be in God's family and his kingdom, if you can do it, then anybody can do it. That's the way it works. If you can do it, anybody can do it. God can do it with anybody. God can do it even with wise and mighty people, or he can do it with other blockheads who just haven't been called yet. So, brethren, your calling is more valuable than anything else on earth. Now, you're looked down on by some people in your life. You have to know that that's true. I know it's true. I've actually been called a cult follower about 3 times in the last month by ones who have known me since I've been in the church. You know, they are my friends. We get along fine, but when their real feelings come out, that's the comment they make. It's interesting. They put up with us, we get along fine. And I can put up with a comment like that, but there it is. That's the real thoughts. And I think you probably have people in your life who may actually think the same thing about you. Maybe I've not set the best example. That's probably part of it for sure. But in reality, you know, they look at what we do and they reject God's way of life, or at least as much of God's way of life as I can show them. They reject it for now. It's okay. Verse 29. So God calls us and he does these things. Verse 29, that no flesh should glory in his presence. Eventually people are going to see that they were not lined up right, that they weren't thinking right, that they weren't acting right. They're going to see it. They're going to understand it. Their eyes are going to be open. It's going to be an aha moment for them, I'm sure. In some cases they could have been lined up. They maybe were offered the opportunity to do it, they just weren't willing. They'll have their eyes open. But brethren, we can't glory either. We cannot. Not in ourselves. Look at the gifts that we're given. They're mentioned here in verse 30, some of them. But of him, that is, well, it says, of him you are in Christ Jesus. So, of him, that's the Father who somehow drew you to Jesus Christ, to the truth, to something very special and very unique. Who of God, talking about Jesus Christ now, who of God is made unto us wisdom and righteousness and sanctification and redemption. So brethren, always remember it's through the blood of Jesus Christ. Remember how this works when it talks about these things. You really have an understanding. It's through the blood of Jesus Christ that he was able to enter through the veil to be with the Father in heaven. That's Hebrews 9. You should always remember that. It's through Christ's blood that he was able to do that, to be with the Father together. They send the Spirit, this special power of the universe, the Holy Spirit. And then somehow through that, to that spirit, you, the blockhead, the one who was nothing, nothing special, that in your heart you knew you were, you can have wisdom, it says, godly wisdom, real righteousness. That only comes through the Spirit of God. Sanctification, it means, if you look it up, it means purification, really pure. You can actually be pure. If you're not there yet, that's where you're headed. And you can, if you've been here a number of years, you can look back and you can see the trail. That's where it's leading. It's leading you to really become pure. And then it says redemption. You know, the example is that man who was crippled for 38 years, couldn't lift himself up to get into the water. He stood up, carried his bed. He was released from bondage. It's figurative for you. The same thing has been done for you. And it means that we don't have to stay morons. We don't have to stay weak and nothing. Not forever. Verse 31, that according as it is written, he that glories, let him glory in the Lord. So brethren, glory in your calling. But remember, I'm not sure glory is the right word, English word, at least the way we use it today. Be happy in your calling. Be excited about it. Remember, you were sitting there blind. You were sitting there crippled. You were blind from birth when God walked up and he tapped you on the shoulder. So you can glory. You can rejoice. You can be happy. You can be ecstatic about that calling, for sure. But always be humble. And remember that you never, ever deserved your calling. Let's go back to John 9. So this man was given his sight, and the Pharisees grilled this man to find out how he did it and how it happened on the Sabbath and all that. Verse 15, John 9. Then again the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He said unto them, he put clay upon my eyes, and I washed, and do see. Therefore said some of the Pharisees, this man is not of God, because he doesn't keep the Sabbath. As it said, how can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? And there was a division among them. So the world believes at least part of the Pharisees here, right? They believe Jesus did not keep the Sabbath day. You read this, and I think you believe the opposite, that Jesus did something special on the Sabbath day that really highlighted the ultimate meaning of the day. Both these events occurred on the Sabbath, both fantastic miracles, and they really, I think, for us, they make us look forward to the time when the Sabbath is really fulfilled, looking toward the return of Jesus Christ, the millennium, and the healing of everyone. So what he did on that day really made it, I think, more special. He wasn't breaking it. Let's go down to verse 30. The man answered and said unto them, why, this is a marvelous thing, that you know not from where he is, and yet he has opened my eyes. Now we know that God hears not sinners, but if any man be a worshiper of God and does his will, them he hears. Since the world began, it was not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was born blind. If this man were not of God, he could do nothing. So this man who was given sight, physical sight, was also given insight. He was given wisdom. I think if you were to ask him in the future, something more valuable than even his eyesight. And he told the Pharisees kind of an inconvenient truth to them. And they didn't take it very well. They answered and said unto him, you were altogether born in sins, and you're going to teach us? And they cast him out. They excommunicated him from, I guess, the synagogue. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said unto him, do you believe on the Son of God? So, just like John 5, we have Jesus coming back to find this individual. He found the lame man he found in the temple. Now he finds this man after he's been excommunicated him, after he's been excommunicated. So once again, we have these two parables that I think really do go hand in hand. And he said, do you believe on the Son of God? And he answered and said unto him, who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? He was just like us. Way back when, 1974, I ordered four booklets. And I can't remember what the four were. One of them was, Is This the End Time? I think the other one was U.S. and British Commonwealth, just a small booklet. If you remember back then, some of you were very young back then. Some of you were not even thought about back then. But one of them was a booklet called The Real Jesus. So I did not know the real Jesus. I didn't know the real Jesus even existed. I had no clue. I grew up going to Sunday school, and I didn't pay that much attention in Sunday school, and my Sunday school teachers didn't know very much themselves, you know. I did not know the real Jesus. Neither did this man. He didn't even know how all this happened. Verse 37, Jesus said unto him, you have both seen him, and it is he that talks with you. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. So he had to reveal himself to this formerly blind man. And then it all made sense. You know, everything fell into place in this man's eyes. You know, things clicked in his mind. And his eyes were opened on the inside. It all came together. And surely he was there on the day of Pentecost a couple of days later. I hope so. And Jesus said, for judgment I came into this world, that they which see not might see, talking spiritually, and they which see might be made blind spiritually. If you're arrogant, if you're just think too highly of yourself, you're going to be made blind. And the same is true today. We have to stay humble. And some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words and said unto him, are we blind also? And Jesus said unto him, if you were blind, you should have no sin. But now you say, we see. Therefore, your sin remains. So once again, if you would just in your mind think back to Revelation 3 about those Laodiceans again. They think they see. They do. But Jesus says they're blind. So do we see? So brethren, we do see, okay? God wants us to see. He gives us the gift to be able to see. But we really have to be careful about our attitude in saying that we see. Really careful. You know, humility is really a big deal. It's in play in these stories. It's in play all through the Bible. So I would like to finish with just a few verses from Romans. My hope today is that you realize how special your calling is. I think calling is a good word. You know, it was like the telephone rang and you weren't expecting it. You had no idea who was on the other end, but it turned out to be God on the other end of the phone call and you responded. You didn't think it was a joke. I think if you were a second generation Christian, you knew the phone was going to ring, right? You did. It was guaranteed the phone was going to ring, but you still had to answer it. But for me, I had no clue. I had no clue what was going on. Let's start in Romans 9. So we're going to start in verse 11. Paul is talking about Jacob and Esau, about how God was going to use those two. For the children, being not yet born, they were still in the womb, neither one of them having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election, that's according to a calling, a choosing by God, might stand, not of works, but of him that calls. It was said unto her, the elder shall serve the younger. As it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated, or certainly loved less, or chosen for this role. You know, Jacob was chosen for a better role at that time. What shall we say about that? Is there unrighteousness with God? God forbid. Is God unrighteous for choosing you and giving you this gift? It's a gift nobody realizes you have right now. They don't know the value of it. Is it unrighteous for God to give you that gift and not give it to them? Well, it's not. God has a reason and the prerogative to do what he wants. For he says to Moses, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. So then it is not of him that wills or of him that runs, nothing we did made us deserve our calling, but of God that shows mercy. And now over to chapter 11. Verse 25, for I would not, brethren, that you should be ignorant of this mystery, lest you should be wise in your own conceits. So, brethren, we can glory in our calling. We should glory in it in the right way, not boast about it, but be very, very excited about it. We're in a time in history. This is talking about Jews versus Gentiles and the blinding of Israel. We're in a time in history when this is not such an issue. Jews, Gentiles, and the Church of God. That's kind of played itself out, I think. You may not even know whether you're a Jew or a Gentile. My name is Swartz. Could be German. That's a Gentile. Could be that since I live in this country, my ancestors passed through that part of the world as slaves, and now I'm from Manasseh. I could be Israelite. It doesn't matter. I met someone today named Schultz. She's in the same boat, right? Just because she can sing, it doesn't mean she's an Israelite. Maybe she's a Gentile. Maybe she knows. Maybe she doesn't know. I don't think she knows. I don't think we can be sure. It doesn't matter. But we do have a constant interaction in our lives between those who are called and those who are not called. And also, for most of us, an interaction with those who may have rejected their calling. We are not judges, not yet. Verse 26, and so all Israel shall be saved, as it is written, there shall come out of Zion the deliverer, and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob. It's going to happen for your friends as well. But this is my covenant unto them when I shall take away their sins. That's the new covenant. It's going to be established with Israel at the return of Christ. As concerning the gospel, they are enemies for your sake, but as touching the election, they are beloved for the Father's sake. Their calling it's there still. Israel rejected their calling when Christ was here. They rejected him, most of them. But that was actually in the plan. If you read this, that's the way God kind of designed it, because it was by them rejecting their calling that the Gentiles were brought in. That was God's way of doing it. I doubt that we could come up with a better plan. Verse 29, for the gifts and the calling of God are without repentance. That's all true for Israel. And it may well be true for some we know who have rejected their calling now. Perhaps God has not given up on them. We just cannot judge that at this point. For as you in times past have not believed God, and that was us, yet have now obtained mercy through their unbelief. Even so have these also now not believed, that through your mercy they also may obtain mercy. So we have to stay the course. We may be a good example for those who are going to follow, or maybe those who have had a rougher time following their calling. For God has concluded them all in unbelief, that he might have mercy upon all. Oh, the depths and riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. For who knows, who has known the mind of the Lord? Who has been his counselor? Or who has first given to him, and it shall be recompensed to him again? For of him and through him and to him are all things, to whom be glory forever. So, brethren, you have a fantastic calling. It's a calling that only a small, small fraction of the world will ever get an opportunity to be part of the first fruits. Who knows why God calls you, why he called you in the past? You didn't know these people you're sitting in the room with. You weren't called because you were their buddies. As sure as the world didn't know me. Maybe it does have to do with that blockhead issue. God saw you were a blockhead and said, I'm going to call that blockhead. For a lot of us, I think that's true. But I don't know. And for you, I can't say. But I know that you have been blessed more than anyone else on earth. Just to sit here in this room. To learn, to grow, to have a fabulous future ahead of you. What's called a better resurrection. Life in God's family. One of the first fruits. So brethren, cherish your calling every day. And we'll be back for a Bible study in about 15 minutes, okay?